All right, day one of Baselworld in the books. We were able to gather the team together after a press day, so technically not the first official day of Baselworld, but we got to take our first appointments and start seeing watches today. We were able to gather a good chunk of the team together in one of the apartments we're staying at, into a sort of mock studio in a living room, and kind of see what everybody's first reactions are to the big brands. We got to see Rolex, we got to see Patek Philippe, and we got to see Tudor today. We also got to see Grand Seiko, but we can't really talk about that yet. Everything's still top secret till tomorrow. And we just wanted to get everybody's initial thoughts. So we have Ben and Kara and Jack and myself, and even a guest appearance from Cole and James. So give it a listen, and hope you enjoy the first of our live podcasts from Baselworld 2019. I'm your host, Stephen Pulverant, and this is Hodinkee Radio. Baselworld day one, it's over. I guess it's like day 0.5, right? Like this is press day.
This is press day, correct.
Yeah, so it's Wednesday. We're here in Basel. We've got Jack, we've got Kara, we have Ben.
Yes.
SJP.
Hey, gang.
Quite right.
YOLO.
Yeah. Yeah, we got some cheering off camera and off mic from our producer, Gray. We also have Dave here, also shooting. This is the first time we've done one of these in front of cameras, isn't it?
Hodinkee Radio.
Yeah, the first time we've done Hodinkee Radio.
They're on.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's rolling.
It was a bad joke.
Nicely done, CB.
Sorry.
This isn't Friday Live, though.
It is not.
Let's not get confused.
Oh, shit. My bell's upstairs. No, I'm on it. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to curse.
All right. So Baselworld officially started today for us. For most people, it doesn't start till tomorrow, but it actually started last night for us.
Yes.
Because weirdly, this has never happened before.
Right.
Basically, everything big leaked ahead of time, which doesn't usually happen. I mean, we're talking Patek, Rolex, and Tudor. We knew basically what everything was by 4 or 5 o'clock last night.
Yeah, but around then.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it produced certain efficiencies for us, but holy sheesh, that's a lot of embargo breaking.
It was kind of a bummer.
Was it?
I don't know. Well, it was good for the workflow, but it was kind of a bummer because it's kind of fun to like. Wednesday noon.
You watch the little window
and
go
then,
up
like,
at Rolex.
Keep refreshing the website, looking, all of a sudden it's like boom, there it is. And then last night I was kind of like, oh.
No, it's like you think you're going to want to know what you're getting for Christmas, but if you do find out,
exactly, you get really mad.
Yeah, that's true.
Or cry.
Yeah.
I didn't cry last night though.
So everything
it's
you
okay
did.
If you did.
Wait.
No.
So everything drops last night, and like you said, it kind of changed our workflow. So. People who are listening to this or watching this probably don't know, but kind of the way this works is we get some stuff ahead of time that we can kind of prep and write that we just can't talk about. And then when the embargo lifts, we hit publish and everything's good, and then we get to see the watches and take photos and stuff. But Rolex, Patek, and Tudor in particular don't really do that. So it's sort of old school news reporting where like everything comes out. Often emails don't go out. Like you just sit and refresh the page until eventually there's new watches there. And then we scramble to write everything up as quickly as humanly possible. But we didn't really have to do that last night.
No.
Instead, we got to like take our time and kind of do things the right way, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, kind of, right? I mean, we were still rushing through most of these releases.
Yeah, that's true. It made things a little easier today when the show doors opened for it.
Yeah, and it's funny. So Rolex and Patek took kind of diverging paths with you know responses to leaks. So Patek... pretty much everything leaked on an Instagram post or somewhere. And they basically said, hey, you know what? Fair game. We're uploading everything to the website right now. Go for it. Rolex, on the other hand, didn't do anything. You know, and so basically, you know, we saw this leak on Rolex Passion Report, which is Philip Stahl's website, but we didn't know if this was real or not. You know,
right.
it looked real. It turns out it was real, but you just have no idea. You know, because there's so many websites out there that purport things and say, hey, you know, this is what we'd love to see from Rolex, etc. And so Rolex had no response at all, and so we couldn't go ahead and do too much on it because we didn't know if this was real. Turns out it was. But so the Patek stuff really, really broke last night officially, and then Rolex today at noon with Tudor.
Yeah. So noon today is when the show actually opened its doors, but Jack got to go in ahead of time, right?
Yeah, there was a sort of little separate press tour Before the show opened, before the hall opened officially at 12 noon, and you know, it really does feel different. I mean, without the Swatch group there, it's like meeting a friend who you haven't seen for a while and they're missing a couple of front teeth. You know, you try not to stare, but you're like, whoa, maybe get that looked at.
Yeah, but it would also be like if your friend was missing their front teeth and where their front teeth were, instead there were like restaurants in a really nice press center.
Yeah, exactly. But which is an interesting placement. I mean, so there's a large new press center, which is great. There's a couple of restaurants for visitors to go to, you know, right on the premises that look like restaurants a person would actually want to go to, unlike previous years. So all of that is fantastic. But I did have the thought they are trying maybe to reserve the space for the prodigal son in case he decides to return in 2020. So, you know, without much ado, Swatch Group would just slot right back in there if they wanted to. And, not the official word on the street, but the semi-official buzz is that this is the last year for Breitling, which is going to even free up even more real estate.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, too, because, you know, when you enter through the front doors of Hall 1, traditionally you got kind of LVMH, then you had Patek, Rolex, Tudor, Chopard, and then Swatch Group, and then Breitling behind them, and so on. So it was this sort of unending, continuous stream of big major brands. Now you still have LVMH up front, you have Chopard, you have Patek, you have Rolex, you have Tudor, and then there's sort of a break, right? Like you have the press center, you have these restaurants, and then you get to Breitling, and then behind Breitling there's more. It creates this sort of weird dynamic where like it feels sort of like, oh, up front are all the big brands, and then you get a little bit of a break, and then there's all this other stuff in the back, which I'm sure Breitling isn't super happy about being in the back part, but it does create a different dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, the impression that, you know, one has is that sort of Breitling is not, you know, happy about the whole show situation in general, which I think is you know, probably true. Yeah, but you know, the interesting thing about actually walking through Hall 1 is, I mean, we've, you know, Joe Thompson reported, the statistics on decline in attendance, you know, from 2016, we went from 1,500 exhibitors, we went from 1,500 exhibitors down to about 500 this year. And, you know, it's one thing to look at that as sort of an abstract number, but to actually walk through Hall 1 and say to yourself, wow, it's this, the only thing missing are the tumbleweeds, you know.
Yeah, it really feels empty. And granted, today was press day and it opened at noon, so it's always a slower day, so we'll really get a good, you know, good barometer tomorrow. But we went upstairs to see Grand Seiko this afternoon, and usually there are two aisles, you know, basically three rows of booths, and this year there are not. And so a lot of booths were kind of pulled up, and you see just open spaces behind them. Really, really different feel all around. There.
Yeah, I mean, we never really covered them on Hodinkee because they weren't, you know, in our wheelhouse. But Swarovski had a central place on the second floor. You know, this huge sort of circular booth covered with, basically covered with glitter that was 25 feet high, and it's gone.
All right, so enough about the show. Let's talk about the watches. Right. So today, day one, press day. We really focused on Rolex, Tudor, and Patek Philippe. We also saw Grand Seiko, but we actually can't talk about any of that yet because they're having a press conference tomorrow. And
that's right.
We don't want them to kill us, right. So that's fine. Rolex, Patek, and Tudor. Patek was first, right?
Yeah, we saw Patek. Patek was our first appointment. It's a Hodinkee tradition to see Patek Philippe very first at Baselworld, an honor, truly. And we saw some stuff.
We certainly did.
Jack, what did you think?
I really wasn't sure about a couple of pieces, but seeing them in person was, I'm a convert. I think, especially the steel Calatrava with the weak number complication. I mean, in person, it's like it's a really charming watch.
It's a neat thing.
Yeah,
it's a neat thing,
and it works in
what
a way that
you think
that
about
I
the handwriting stuff on the dial.
You know, I still don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I'm not convinced.
That with like a normal typeface would be like, okay, I get it. The like kind of faux handwritten vibe is a little
it's
bizarre.
A little weird.
It's a little cartoonish, but I think it's kind of cool.
All right.
I mean, I can tell you based on feedback from a few retail friends, and I've got a few, they said that the demand for that is bananas. They said it's the strongest demand of any watch that Patek has done in the last 5 years.
At $33,000 for what's basically a time and date wristwatch, let's not forget.
Well, week.
Week.
New complication. Weekly.
53 weeks.
Yep.
And the Philippe Barat, who's the head of technical development at Patek, said that weeks don't really matter to Americans, but weeks really matter to Europeans.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I think in a European business environment, the international standard for what what constitutes the number of weeks in a year is used as the basis for the business calendar.
Yeah, wow. Jack so is an expert in European business. I don't
Interesting.
Know if you
knew
that.
And calendars.
A man of many talents.
Our editor-in-chief and European business editor, Jack Forrester. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think the big takeaway here is, right, like this is an introduction slated to relieve them a little bit of the pressure around Nautilus.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Steel, it's pretty much the same price. It's a different vibe. It's round. Which is what they want to be.
It's
they
a strap watch.
It's a strap watch, right?
Kind of vintagey.
Yeah, but you know, Ben, as a veteran sort of market watcher and taste observer as well as tastemaker, I mean, do you really think there's going to be conversion for a potential Nautilus client to this?
I think there might be when you truly
if
cannot
the demand
get a Nautilus,
is actually
that demand is real. Yeah. I'm sure of that. And so when you truly cannot get a Nautilus, and you say, oh, like here's a neat thing in steel. For roughly the same price, I think there will be some conversion.
That has, if not the same vibe, at least a more youthful.
Yeah, it's vintage. It's cool. It's casual. It's on a calf strap. Like you can wear it with jeans. You know, the old stuff on Croc just doesn't work. And I think also we look at the Aquanaut. The Aquanaut 5 years ago was a whatever watch. I mean, it was like the poor man's Nautilus. And now you can't get a Nautilus, and so the Aquanaut is hot.
And so if you look now you can't get Aquanaut.
You can't get Aquanaut.
Exactly. You can't get Aquanaut.
So you know, soon enough, you won't be able to get this calendar watch.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of Aquanaut.
Yeah.
I love the new Aquanaut.
The khaki green's really cool.
I'm really into it. I don't wear a lot of green, but I'm into it.
No, it looks good in real. It looks good on the wrist.
It's cool. I mean, the thing is, it's a larger case. And it's a 5168, which they introduced last year in white gold with a blue dial, 20th anniversary. It's bigger. It's 40 or 42.
It's 42.2.
42.2 with the kind of that curved bracelet. It wears large.
It's kind of like a very Baroness Karen Blixen watch. You know, it's like a Happy Valley Africa. You know, extremely wealthy, but also like super, super decadent guy.
I'm looking around to see if anybody here caught that reference.
I don't get it.
Okay, so producers did not, Stephen did not, I did not,
Bauer
did not.
I would like an explanation.
Should we just let this slide? Yeah. Are we going
to
make Jack explain
this? No, I would like Jack to explain it.
Nobody?
Is it out of Africa?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I heard you say Africa.
Well, Car has homework for tomorrow.
Well, no spoilers. Baroness Karen von Blixen might have worn this watch.
Okay.
Cool.
It looked good on James Stacey.
She must have been cheap.
Say that.
I mean, if it looks good on James Stacey, you're set. That's all you need.
That's it.
What
else?
The
alarm
ladies
watch.
The alarm watch, which is the big
guy this year.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
That one I saw the release was like, why the fuck is this alarm watch $226,000? You know,
I think we all said the same thing.
Yeah, because I mean, like, you can buy a Memovox new for $10,000.
But you know, like, then you see what actually went into this, and then like, I mean, yes, technically it's an alarm watch, but technically the Battleship Iowa is a boat.
It's exactly. You know, I mean it's so for the listeners at home, it's basically using minute repeater technology.
Yeah,
and that's why it's $226,000.
If you don't know, Paddock makes the best minute repeaters, I think, out there.
Yeah, I would say that's
I would agree, yeah.
The best sounding ones.
It's a pretty neat, I mean, again, I'm not a huge fan of the Pilot aesthetic, and doing that in platinum, whatever.
It also has four huge crowns sticking off the sides.
Gigantic.
Yes. It does.
The watch kind of looks like a spider. Like, it's got the lugs and the crowns. It's like, it's got a lot of stuff coming off.
Spiders have eight legs, though, don't they? Spiders have eight legs.
Yeah, it has four crowns and four lugs.
Oh.
Interesting.
Count it.
So, yeah. So, platinum calendar Pilot watch,
right,
with alarm, right. $227,000.
Right.
So that's a thing now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a thing we all have to deal
with. Now we know.
Yeah.
Now
we know. The 5170 also got a successor, right?
Yep. Yeah. 5172.
Which is in the metal,
You're into it? Yeah. I haven't seen it in the metal yet.
In the pictures, I wasn't so sure, and then I saw it in real life. The dial's really beautiful. The blue's really matte. The numbers look great. They did a good job.
Syringe hands, right?
Syringe hands, pushers from the 1463.
Yeah.
And it's got that same step case of the 5320.
Yeah.
Or 5330. I don't know.
Some people are saying, the movement's not a good enough match for the case anymore, but it looks fine to me. I mean, it's not a penny in a birdbath or something.
It's the last reference 5170 was over 39 millimeters. 41, it's fine.
It's
Ladies Nautilus. Boom.
Ladies Nautilus.
It's kind of sweet.
Yeah, it is sweet. It's 35.2 millimeters, which is bigger than the last
Without
diamonds.
Solid gold, right?
Solid gold. You can get it without diamonds.
So they did a rose gold with diamonds, and then they did a steel, smaller, and now they're doing 35.2 millimeters in plain rose gold and steel with diamonds.
This has that kind of like wavy dial.
It does, yeah. Which,
what are your thoughts on the wavy dial?
Okay, so it's... Before...
Let's real talk. Wavy dial.
Before today, I wasn't so sure about the wavy dial. It wasn't my favorite because it's kind of like, I just kind of wish it looked like the regular old Nautilus. Yeah. Nautilus. So I did really like seeing this one today, the rose gold. But I will say they definitely do that on purpose so that guys won't buy it.
Interesting. You think that's the case?
Although that's
I think they're trying to keep it as a feminine watch because they're trying to push their women's watches right now.
I mean, don't you think there are gentlemen who would?
Yes, I think there are. I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm just saying I think that's the logic.
You think it's so that people don't see it and say, I can't get a 5711, it's like a 3800. I'll buy the 7118.
Yeah, it's the same size as a 3800.
It's a 3800, but modern.
Right.
And you can't get the 5711.
That's actually interesting.
That's really interesting.
Thank you, guys. Sometimes. But yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was great.
Okay.
Anyways. Yeah. Oh, and then we saw a fully diamond-encrusted 24 automatic.
Which James's camera could not focus on.
Yes, we tried to take pictures to show you guys, but you can't because the camera wouldn't focus.
Yeah.
Because there were too many.
It was this is core Hodinkee audience. This was a $300,000 plus Patek 24.
Yes.
Sweet. Yeah. Sweet, sweet, sweet.
Well, we should talk about the alarm watch for $200,000 because I think it's kind of the same thing.
I mean, a steel date watch for $33,000. At some point, it's you're buying art, aren't you?
Yeah.
Or are you?
Let's go with that.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, we'll go with that. Moving on.
Let's go to the opposite of before we
leave, there's a new version of the Cloisonné dial.
World Time.
World Time.
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful.
That was real Patek.
I'm going to have to go back and see
that. I will say before we jump into something else, it's like, I've been lucky enough to look at a bunch of, enamel dials over the last, dozen or so years. And, you see varying levels of quality. And it's easy to forget, like, Patek has its reputation for, it does have its reputation for a reason. You know, I mean, I looked at the enamel dial on this watch through a loop, and it's flawless.
Yeah. Stuff like that, stuff like the minute repeaters, like, it's Patek. Yeah. They do it really well.
Yeah,
they do a really damn good job.
As I think I've said publicly, like the Patek has competition below $150,000. Lange, Vacheron in some cases, right. Even Chopard and Montblanc in the Patek. In the chronograph arena. But once you get into like the super complication or the grand complication, they're on their own. There's nobody else that has that many different references, that many different movements.
Yep.
It's special stuff. It really is. But you just don't see it because it's all on application. So they're not in retailers ever.
Right? Yeah, their Métier d'Art stuff is just that's. So consistently so much better than everything else from anybody else.
Correct.
Really they are cool. Who they are.
Well,
for
actually,
a reason.
We'll link up in the notes to the show. We did a story a couple years ago about all their minute repeaters.
Yeah.
We had them all. They had them all in one place and we were able to go and record them. And it's a pretty amazing experience.
Their minute repeaters are amazing.
Yeah.
They're insane.
And there is a new one. It's a 5078G with that black enamel dial
with like arabesque pattern.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Which we could not play with because it would not come out of its vitrine to play with us.
Right, right.
Untouchable.
Yes.
All right. Opposite of Patek.
Yes.
Tudor.
It's not a Tudor.
Tudor. Okay.
What do you guys think? So we got we'll go over the highlights. We got a
two-tone chrono.
We got a two-tone Black Bay chronograph.
Looks sweet.
Which is awesome.
It is
looks kind of like a John Player special a little bit.
It's also on a bun strap.
Yeah.
It's also on a bun strap. Yeah.
Comes on a bun strap.
We got a Black Bay bronze with this like beautiful slate gray dial.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Super tasteful.
Yep.
And then the big guy is
the dive watch,
the PO1.
It's really cool.
Is it? I'll see it tomorrow.
I saw it. It's really cool. It has the bezel locking mechanism and it's based on a prototype from, I think, 1969.
So I'll add a little color here. So that watch has been kind of circulating on Instagram and some books. You know, there's some kind of like, grainy photos of it around for years.
There's some controversy.
Quite right.
Yes.
Everybody assumed it was a fake. Just straight up. I mean, like the people that really know, like the guys that whose names we all know and respect. Everyone's like, oh, that's a fake. Like, don't even give me that.
It's the most universally acknowledged Franken watch in the universe.
One of them. I mean, top three for sure. And so now, they made this watch, which means Rolex feels pretty good about this being a real thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they made this as a prototype to pitch to the United States Navy, and apparently Bulova actually won the contract. And so they made at least one or two of them, basically as an internal Franken watch. They took pieces of parts from around the factory and put it together.
I mean, it's interesting. There is actually a patent, which is a matter of public record, for the bezel locking mechanism. So, it's not unreasonable to assume that an actual prototype was produced.
Yeah.
So where is the prototype?
I don't know. Do they have it in the booth?
They have it. It's in the booth.
Yeah.
Oh, they have it.
It's in one of the windows at the booth.
They have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to go back and take pictures.
Trying to get them to take it out of the booth. We'll see if they
for you.
For me?
For Stevie P?
We'll see. But...
leaving aside the sort of controversial aspect, it's kind of a cool watch in person. You know, I mean, it's got a little bit of a Rolex Deep Sea vibe to it. You know, I mean, the same sort of weird attraction that an obviously overbuilt watch that is designed to prevent accidents from happening that in real life you will never encounter, can have.
The thing I like most about it is Tudor's done a really good job over the last couple of years building super consumer friendly watches. Like. Mm-hmm. Basically, anybody can buy a Black Bay, love a Black Bay. Right. Black Bay chronograph, people love it. Pelagos, people love it. it's accessible. Black Bay 36. I mean, like, right. Really, really accessible.
Well, with the Black Bay chronograph is, I think, a little bit of a
okay, but still, for some people. Still, like, but, they're relatively
but in
accessible
general, yeah,
consumer sure. focused pieces. This is super weird. Like, I would
thing.
Imagine very few people are going to... This is going to be a niche watch. This is not something I think Tudor expects to sell 100,000 of, you know?
Our newest editor, Cole Pennington, was in the meeting, and, you know, this is kind of his jam. I mean, he's got very granular, you know, sort of knowledge of this kind of thing. And, you know, what he said, and he's going to be on the pod later this week, but what he said was he actually found the fact that this is such a niche thing, you know, really, really attractive.
Yeah.
Like, he's not interested in the Black Bay 58s of the world, but, you know, like something, you know, almost borderline bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to him, it's fascinating.
I mean, I just can't imagine, knowing the Rolex executive team and board a little bit, not personally, but I know of them. I just can't imagine that board meeting where they said, yeah, like, let's green light this. Let's do this, you know? But that happened.
Yep.
It's
it
cool.
Is.
Here we
it
are.
It kind of reminds me of the old days of Rolex, like some of the weird vintage stuff that you get from the like 50s and 60s, where you just go, who the hell thought this was a good idea to make this, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there was so cool. much weird stuff back in the day. And this, as you said, I mean, this feels like the old days.
Yeah. All right. Rolex. Got to talk Rolex.
Rolex.
What are your thoughts, Ben? I want to hear your hot take.
I mean, it's a
sum
total,
up Rolex.
It's a total meh here, you know? I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, to be clear, like, I fully understand why it is that way. Like,
yeah.
Rolex can't deliver shit. You know, you can't get a steel GMT, you can't get a steel Daytona. It's hard finding Rainbow Daytona. It's hard finding half the stuff in the catalog that came out over the past 3 years. So to add another banger on top of that nobody else can get, it just creates more problems for the retailers. You know,
right.
They have to turn more people down. This year was strategic, I'm sure. Rolex is the best.
It's always strategic.
It is. And so they said, hey, like, let's just consolidate. Let's take some stuff that needs some tweaking and do that. And really, you know, not have a runaway hit. I mean, there's really no new model releases this year.
Nope.
No.
Really.
I was curious about the, I wasn't actually in our Rolex appointment. I was, you know, with a sister brand next door at the time. But the new Yachtmaster?
Yeah,
that's
cool. A cool one.
That would be the closest thing to a new watch. So that is a Yachtmaster, which currently exists, mm-hmm. but in a 2 millimeter larger case, mm-hmm. now in white gold. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
So it's 42 now?
It's 42.
It's 42, but that matte black bezel is
matte ceramic bezel
so
is fucking cool.
Yeah.
I wish that were out on other watches.
I agree.
But yeah, and then I mean, new movements and new kind of case details on the day dates and date just cool.
Which I actually really like.
Of course.
So the new Jubilee bracelets, the end links.
Batman on a Jubilee.
Batman on Jubilee.
Batman on Jubilee. Yeah. But the new Jubilee bracelet, the end links are different. So it doesn't look like sort of the bracelet ends and then there's an end link that kind of joins it to the case. It looks like the bracelet just sort of flows into the case. The end link looks almost like a mix of the links.
Yeah.
New movement in the Batman on Jubilee. Mm-hmm. What else? I don't even know.
Well, there's a diamond covered day date with rainbow indices.
There's that.
Right. Cool. Cool.
121,000.
Serious reporting here.
Pretty
white
on brand.
Gold,
two-tone
sea dweller.
Two-tone sea dweller.
Moving
that's
on already.
Yeah, we're
that that's kind of the big piece this year, right?
Two-tone. So sea dweller is the only tool watch that has never come with any precious metal details, period. It's the only one. So this is truly the moment, I think, when Rolex goes luxury, when a sea dweller is done in precious.
Yeah.
You know, it's a luxury product at that point.
Yeah, agreed. You know, I think for me, like you said, there are some obvious sort of commercial reasons for Rolex doing this. But also, like, this is what Rolex does, right? Like, Rolex has basically made mostly the same family of watches for the last 50, 60 years.
Yes.
Right? And what they do is just every couple of years, they make them a little bit better. They update them. They put some new technology in them. They change the metals, whatever.
Yeah.
And every year, they get a little bit better. And there's something nice about the fact that they don't see the need to come out with some crazy new reference, some new complication, some new whatever, just to keep people feeling like there's new.
Yeah.
They just make the same watches and they make them better.
Yeah.
If you buy a Datejust 6 months from now, it'll be better than if you bought a Datejust 6 months ago.
Yeah, and I would almost, you know, so this year, I believe, 2018 rather, last year, was the most successful year in Rolex history, I believe. And I get that with the GMT and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if now this year is the most successful year in Rolex history based on just the overwhelming, you know, kind of like latent demand from last year and in the past few years. They don't need new stuff to have a great year, you know? They just don't.
Yeah, they can't fill the demand they've got on any level. Grand Seiko?
Grand Seiko we can't talk about.
Yeah, we can't talk about it.
Oh, sure.
Not until tomorrow.
Sorry about that.
What else can we talk about?
You know what I saw?
You have top secret information.
I do.
No one else
Random thing I saw today that put a smile on my face.
We should all go around and do that.
Actually, that's a really good idea. Can I go first?
Yes.
No, you
You're
have to
going
wait till
right
the
now.
End.
No.
Yeah. No.
So in the 1970s, there was a watch called the Compucron, made by Bulova, which was a
I knew
a sort
this was going to be a Bulova story.
Yeah,
this I don't is know great. How I knew that, but I knew it.
But wait. So it's a sort of a, like a driver's watch orientation, not liquid crystal display, but like an actual LED watch. And LED watches, they didn't last for terribly long because the LEDs use up a lot more battery power than LCDs, and you basically have to push a button anytime you want to see the time. But they have reproduced that watch. It's like it's basically a perfect copy paste of the watch from the 1970s, and you know us gentlemen of a certain
age.
It's
also gold plated, right?
Yeah, it's gold plated. Chrome. Yeah. Is there a two tone version? I can't remember. I know there's a gold one and a chrome one. It's just a great nostalgia trip, and it's like under $500.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
CB?
We'll put a smile on your face.
Other than the rainbow date.
I know. I can't. I was thinking I was going to say that, but I feel like I'm being a dead horse with that one. I was seeing people I haven't seen in a while around the fair.
Like who?
Just, you know, other journalists. Why are you quizzing me on
this? I'm just curious. On the spot.
Are you being sincere right now?
Yeah, I am. It's just nice to see like all the people from the brands I haven't seen in a while and all the other
Who's
journalists
your favorite person
here.
From the brand?
I can't choose favorites.
Okay.
Ben Clymer right now.
Oh. this.
You burn.
Yeah. You burn.
All right, BC.
Thing that put the biggest smile on my face is I was coming out of the bathroom, walking down the stairs, and I see...
Great start to that story.
I'm just calling it like it is, you know? So I come down the stairs and I see Mike Tay, who's the proprietor of the Hourglass, and he's a great retailer, talking to none other than Jean-Claude Beaver. Oh, somebody's here.
Wow, somebody's
and,
here. Those are two of the best guys in the
industry,
they're the
best. So they're chit-chatting, and I walk over. Who do you think that is?
Oh.
I don't know. James Stacey? Cole Pennington?
It's on the phone.
White button on the left-hand side of the phone on the wall. Black phone on the wall.
Black phone on the wall.
Yeah, it should.
Yeah. Yeah. Pick up the phone.
Pick up the phone.
Press the buzzer.
There's
we have a real professional studio going on here.
But it's the white button on the side.
Here,
of the phone.
Elevator working.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So I'll start over. So I guess I don't need to talk about the bathroom, right?
You can talk about the bathroom.
Okay, so I came out of the bathroom, and I walked down the stairs, and I see Mike Tay, who's the proprietor of the Hourglass, which is one of the, if not the largest retailer in Asia, and Australia for that matter, talking to Jean-Claude Beaver. Two guys I know pretty well. We go over there. We start talking about a simplicity. So to talk about a simplicity, Mike Tay has at least one. I have one. And Jean-Claude Beaver just bought one this week from Philips in London.
That's pretty cool little club. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we're talking about the simplicity for a little bit. And then I noticed this little like crown sticking out of Jean-Claude's cuff. And I expect it to be a Patek, which he's done from time to time, or a Hublot, and it's actually a 6263 Daytona.
Boom.
So he comes back to Basel, no longer officially with LVMH, and he just puts on a vintage Daytona, and he's just like, fuck it, I can do whatever I want.
That guy's such a boss.
He's the boss. I mean, he is actually the boss, and literally, and he was just like, he feels great. He's, you know, he's not here in an official capacity. He's just meeting with friends, hanging out, wearing a vintage Daytona.
It's not bad.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Stephen J. Pulvern.
Mine is, what was my best? Oh, you know what I loved? Saw Rene Byer in the press lounge today. Yeah, which if you remember, we recorded Talking Watches with him a year ago. We did it on the way to Basel last year.
Mm-hmm. On the road to Basel?
On the not quite road to Basel. We should do that again, by the way.
Yeah, we should.
But I got to see him and have a quick catch up with him. And he's,
Can I just say, by the way, I don't suffer much from professional jealousy. But
Jack just winked at me like real hard.
Boy, oh boy, do I wish I'd done that Talking Watches. What an unfreaking believable collection.
Yeah.
I mean, you expect that from Rene Byer, but
totally.
Still.
And I'd
and
seen
like
the
some
museum.
Of those watches, I, you know, I, several of those watches I knew he had, but boy, to see them in person. Oh, yeah.
I'd seen the museum before and I knew of Rene, but I hadn't met him. And honestly, you know, going into that recording, we were talking about production ahead of time, you know, Gray and Dave who were here and Will, who's manning the fort back in New York, we kind of talked about it, and I didn't really have a handle on what Rene was going to be like, and I kind of assumed, like, you know, he's eighth or ninth generation in the industry, huge retailer. I expected him, honestly, to be a little stuffy, a little reserved, you know, kind of quiet, and that it was going to be a hard episode to really get stories out of him.
Right.
Dude, we could have talked to that guy for 6 hours, and he would not have stopped. He's just this, like, fun, gregarious, super friendly, really down-to-earth
you
guy
know, isn't
who
it,
loves
and
sharing.
And isn't it nice to meet somebody who's a name in our world, and you find out that the reason they're a name in our world is because they actually genuinely love watches?
Yeah, this guy really cares.
Like, it's a nice feeling.
Yeah, know? I agree. So just getting to see him, say a quick hello. I mean, we chatted for 2 minutes, you know, but just getting to see him and say hi was a nice way to kind of start things.
Can I add something else? Something sure, else that made me smile? This is not Baselworld related at all.
Okay.
Little story. So about a month ago, I was meeting with Christian Selmany of Vacheron, saying this crazy watch. I was asking him about vintage Vacheron, which I love.
So this is creative director of Vacheron.
Yes, exactly. And he said, hey, we've got this thing coming to Phillips. I think it's going to land, but I can't tell you about it at all. I said, okay, whatever. And then today I was cruising the New York Times. They do this watch supplement on the first day of Basel. Yeah. And Phillips has found this insane watch. Like, really, like, I've seen a lot of vintage watches, me being me, and this is like a holy shit type of thing. It is a retrograde calendar with minute repeater wristwatch from the 30s, and the New York Times ran it today. It's like, it's the craziest thing I've ever seen, from Vacheron anyway. And so that has been on my mind all day.
Ben, do you know offhand who made the movement?
I would think Vacheron, but I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Was that a trick question?
No. But I mean, you know, these brands that made super high complications up in the Valais, yeah. There were only, I mean, as we all know, there were only a few companies that could have made something like that.
Repeater probably from Piguet, I would think, but I can check. But I mean, Phillips did a release in the New York Times today, and it looks like a bonkers watch.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool.
So.
All right.
I mean,
well,
it is exciting that there are things like that still come up.
Absolutely. You know, it takes
unicorns
a lot. Yeah, I mean, this is a unicorn. It takes a lot, but when you see it, you're like, oh, fuck. Like, that's a crazy thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So. We can still have fun in this business.
Every now and then. Yeah. Or like right now. This is fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Four of us sitting around, chit-chatting.
Just hanging out.
Yeah, Gray's got a glass in the air over there, twirling his hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So we got some evening events we have to go to, right? And then we have to... I don't know. I guess write some stories so that people have things to read and look
somebody
at.
Somebody does.
Not Ben. Yeah, Ben is fine. Ben's done. cool, this is your last commitment. Yeah. But
and I, Jack Forster, say thank God for the younger, more energetic members of the team.
Shout out to Cole Pennington, first Basel back
yeah,
there.
Oh,
yeah,
Cole
yeah.
Pennington.
Cole.
Oh, wherever
Cole,
he is.
Cole. Hey,
off. Hey, James, Cole, you guys want to come over here? Get on the pod for a second?
They're passed out in the corner.
Yeah, they're done.
They're just drunk.
Turns
in the
out they've been drinking beer the whole time we've been recording this.
I think Cole was actually
we got Cole. We got right, Frank
we got
Rota.
These two guys.
Hey, Frankie.
Yeah, here we go. Oh yeah, Frank Rota's here. There we go. All right.
Anything you want to say, real quick? We'll put a smile on your face today.
After you, James. I actually really liked the Deep Sea or the I really liked the Sea Dweller in Two Tone more than I expected.
Nice. Well, you do like gold.
I do solid. Imagine that in solid. I think that's what was making me smile. I was like, I'm just getting there.
What's going to happen is in like 3 years, they're going to release a solid gold deep sea.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just passes out in the meeting.
I need a bigger arm, but it'd be good.
Hey, Cole, now that you're here, can I ask you, I would love to hear what you have to say about the Tudor.
Which one is that?
You know which one.
Oh, I know which one. Yeah. I guess so. This might go against popular opinion, but I absolutely loved it. I think the context is super, super cool. Anything where you're reaching into the past and, you know, doing something completely different, right? And what I like about it is, yeah, it's actually not designed for everyone, and that's all right. You know, that's to produce a watch that people like me are interested in, that's kind of cool.
Awesome. Well, all right.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
We'll be seeing... both of you tomorrow for tomorrow's pod.
What is James drinking right now? That's the question.
It's straight whiskey. It's always what James
is. Is that Canadian whiskey?
No, it's a Lagavulin. They didn't have any Canadian.
Ooh. James is Canadian for those who don't know.
Yeah. FYI. Cool. All right. Let's wrap this thing up, and we will see everybody back here same time tomorrow to debrief on the first full day of Baselworld.
Boom.
We'll have a lot of brands to talk about, a lot of watches to talk about. Hopefully some more good stories.
Don't drop the mics.
We need the mics all week. All right.
Okay, these are brand new mics. Don't drop them.
Cool. See you guys tomorrow. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, bye.
Peace out.
We're recording a podcast.